Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
Good morning. It is April 25th. It is 7 minutes after nine. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So a protest calling for a ceasefire in Gaza has spilled onto the streets, and that is forcing police to close the section of Meridian Street near the governor's mansion. IMPD officers learned about this group of protesters. They were blocking the intersection of 49th and Meridian Streets, and they are now shutting down the traffic all the way to 46th Street so the street can be cleared. Free Palestine chants have been heard. And this started from the protest rally at Tarkington Park at 7:30 this morning.
Every one of these people should be arrested. Every one of them should be thrown in jail, but likely nothing will happen to them. And you know why they're doing this, Casey?
Because they know they can, because the governor doesn't stop protests.
Absolutely, 100%. What happened in 2020 when on live TV, a guy who's now in jail in Portland for attempting to kill cops was leading a group that threatened to seize the governor's residence on statewide television, afterwards said, "I went there prepared to die." What happened to that guy?
He was able to help write part of the police reform
bill. That's right. Malik Muhammad not only was not arrested after threatening to seize the governor's residence on live TV, he was days later given a VIP meet and greet with the governor. Mm-hmm. And then after he wasn't arrested, he went to Portland and is now in jail for attempting to kill cops. These people are doing this, every single one of them, unless you have a permit, who are blocking traffic, should absolutely 100% be arrested and thrown in jail.
I'm curious if we know where the mayor is.
Go, Casey, you and your drugs. You're so funny. The reality is people behave in a manner, it's no different than a toddler, which I have right now. Mm-hmm. When my toddler does something wrong, I very sternly reprimand her. And then if she does it again, I put her where she can't do that. Or there's some form of, now, obviously, like punishing a baby is different than punishing an adult. But from the time people are first able to process what's going on around them, they have to understand that no means no, and there are rules and there are laws. And in this city, people believe if the cause is right, they can do whatever the hell they want to do, because our governor and our mayor, people from two separate parties, have told people you can do whatever you want to do. And not only in the case of the BLM stuff in 2020, was Holcomb not going to do anything about it. He was going to reward you for the behavior. So why would these people think they're going to do anything other than be rewarded for disrupting society?
Well, you said there are rules and laws. That is correct. But when rules and laws are not enforced, what's to deter any of them? They know that there's no repercussions, so they're just going to keep on going.
There is no bigger act of jerkism. Or how about that, Casey? Mm-hmm. Jerkism. I think I just made up a word. Than to think that your thing is so important that the rules don't apply to you, that the laws don't apply to you, and think that you have the right to shut society down. No, those roads belong to the people as a collective. They don't belong to you. There are processes and ways by which you can get permits if you'd like to march in the street. Mm-hmm. But these people know that it doesn't matter whether they go through the proper channels, because absolutely zero enforcement is going to take place, and they'll be able to get off scot-free. And they can do whatever they want because the governor and the mayor are completely weak individuals who regularly cave into political correctness and will absolutely make sure that nothing happens to these people.
It is 10 minutes after 9. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Another big story happening this morning, and that is the fact that Jennifer McCormick has received not only an endorsement from the Indiana State Teachers Association, but also access to about $1.3 million for her campaign.
So it's very hard for people to look at teachers and go, "Oh my gosh, you poor people, and you're suffering because of your pay," when you have $1.3 million, which is how the Teacher Association is largely funded, through dues from teachers, members of the association. When you have so much money laying around that you can spend $1.3 million on a lady who has much a chance to be governor as I do, and I'm not running.
And you're not running. Yeah.
They are literally going to flush $1.3 million down the toilet, yet we are led to believe, oh my gosh, you poor suffering teachers. To the average person, this does not compute. Jennifer McCormick is a fraud. She has no core convictions whatsoever. She aligned with the Republicans in 2016 when it was beneficial for her to get elected. And then as soon as it became unofficial, when they took the state superintendent's job away from the voting public, she quickly changed over to being what many people believe she had always been, which was a Democrat. Now, once again, you know who's to blame for Jennifer McCormick? Holcomb and Hupfer. Because in 2016, there was a contested race for state superintendent at the Republican State Convention. And Holcomb and Hupfer and that establishment squad were so afraid of an actual conservative and a person who actually believes in parental rights, believes in the idea that parents are in charge of the children, not the public education system, that they backed Jennifer McCormick knowing what she was. Jennifer McCormick is behaving as she has always been right now. And she was only a thing because of Holcomb and Hupfer and that group of people getting behind her and ensuring that she was the nominee for state superintendent. But let's get back to the teachers for a second. You have $1.3 million laying around to give money to this woman who has no chance to win whatsoever. And this is totally ideologically, 100% ideologically driven. And yet you want me to believe that there's an issue with your pay. Help me compute these two things, Casey, because I'm not an expert on anything, but $1.3 million sounds like a lot of money that could really help the pay of teachers.
It seems to me that the $1.3 million may not be going to her campaign as much as their push for school choice.
No, come on,
like
Casey.
They think that this is just a platform they can use through her rather than for her.
Well, but they're propping her up. It's going to support her. It's going to support getting her elected. Whether it directly gets deposited into her campaign account or it goes through some third-party get-out-the-vote operation, they're giving this money to help her get elected, which people look at this, and there's two sides to this, but for the first things first. People look at this and say, okay, the State Teachers Association is totally 100% ideologically driven. It's not about kids. It's not about education. It's about ideology and about benefiting us. The second part of this is, why do the Republicans keep placating these people? Why do Republicans keep throwing more and more and more money at public education every single election, every single budget cycle? These people are never going to support you. Now, they do like Holcomb. The State Teachers Association, we saw they're in bed with Holcomb. They gave money to state party. They like the establishment wing of the Republican Party. They love the Holcomb, Hupfer, Anne Hathaway people. But in terms of actual conservatives, of which the majority of our General Assembly professes to be, why do you keep trying to placate these people? Mm-hmm. Why are Republican legislators posing with these Red for Ed lunatics when they're down at the State House? Clearly, they're never going to support you. They do not share the views that you profess. And I don't know how many times you have to get hit between the eyes with the reality that they don't like you, and no matter how much money you give to them, it's never going to be enough.
Okay, so I know you're going to know these answers. How much is the state budget?
$44 billion.
And how much goes to education?
Over half of it goes to public education.
And what are the test scores of the current third graders?
So bad that we've had to pass a special law about mandating that they be able to read.
And how long have the Republicans been in charge in the state?
Mitch Daniels was elected governor in 2004. I saw our friend from Seymour was bitching about shared the WIBC article. He shared something about this. And I just commented and said, then stop giving them the money, Jim, and stop posing with Red for Ed people at the State House. Again, it's another example of how these lawmakers try to act like they are not to blame for this. The lawmakers are to blame for this. You have a totally ideologically political arm, which is the State Teachers Association, who then has so much money laying around that they can put $1.3 million towards electing someone who is not going to be elected, and then they'll plead poverty for the teachers. It goes back to the same thing we went through with the vaccine, where the teachers were trying to cut in line. Remember that? Where when the vaccine was again, why anybody wanted that, I don't know. But the teachers were literally trying to cut the old people and the elderly, who we were told at the time, that's all that's keeping them alive is this vaccine. And teachers are going, well, that the Teachers Association, they don't represent us. I get that there's a lot of great teachers out there. And there are many, many teachers who the State Teachers Association does not represent, but they do. Because you don't speak out. And when you don't speak out, they do represent you because they say they represent you.
It is Kendall and Casey. It's 93 WIBC. Good morning. Well, I know you guys touched on this yesterday, but let's talk about it again, can we? It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC, and that's the Federal Trade Commission voting 3-2 for a nationwide ban against non-compete agreements.
Now, Klopfenstein and I had a long conversation about this, but I know you wanted to kind of weigh in on this because you make a lot more than I do. And so this really could have a profound impact on you because you're always in high demand.
Sure. Right. Okay. So this new rule, it's not expected to take an effect for another 120 days. And of course, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce pledged to sue the agency over the rule. So who knows if it'll actually come to fruition. But I would imagine since you are under a very fabulous contract, that you've got a non-compete clause in that.
Well, we went into this yesterday about, one of the issues I think that people kind of look at, because look, the free market will dictate that employers and employees will bear out not only what the market says you're worth in terms of wages, but in terms of the ramifications and parameters of your employment period. But in like the industry we work in, we don't work in a free market because the government has already intervened in terms of saying, everyone can't have a radio station. Our boss, our employer, has bought this radio station. A license comes with it. You can't just put a frequency on the air. Mm-hmm. So while I am Mr. Free Market guy, if the government is going to put barrier to access and create a non-free market, which I'm not even objecting to that in terms of how the radio industry works necessarily, because clearly radio airwaves, there's only so many of them. You can't be lapping over people, et cetera. We don't work in a true free market. So if you're not going to have a true free market, then the barrier to access is being created by the government. I don't know. I think there's some act of nobility, for lack of a better term, saying, well, you can't be pigeonholed if we're going to create a barrier to access.
Okay, so a lot of trade groups.
Did that make sense?
Well, a lot of trade groups, they say that it's going to help preserve intellectual property and company secrets. And I understand that.
By having non-competes.
By having non-competes. Right. And I get that. But this, and I'm talking specifically about our industry, there's not really any more secrets left. You know, I mean, I get it. Okay, if a company's going to invest a whole lot of money, for example, if there were going to be a Kendall and Casey billboard,
right?
If they were running television ads, or they were sinking a lot of promotional money to promote us as a team, they're saying, hey, you know what? We're investing a lot of money promoting you. Now, we can't just let you cross the street and take that name recognition with you.
But this is what Klopfenstein and I got into for specifically for radio. Now, the point of this is there's 30 million people this thing goes way, way beyond radio. Mm-hmm. There's 30 million people are going to be impacted by this. Literally, a tenth of the country is going to be impacted by this decision. It's a huge deal. It's all sorts of fields. It's, you know, sometimes the medical field, law fields, obviously media fields. So it's much bigger than us. We're speaking from our own point of experience. To me, the contract covers whether I can just walk across the street. Mm-hmm. The contract says I'm here for another now year and a half. And if they decide I'm not going to be here for a year and a half, they have to pay me a certain amount of money. And otherwise, I'm going to be here busting my ass for 3 hours a day, every day. And by the way, there's nowhere else I want to go. This was the station I wanted to be on since I was a little kid. This is my dream job. I'm not actively looking. My issue with the non-compete is the radio station or radio stations. And by the way, it's clearly not just Urban One. I've had these, like I said yesterday, since I was 20 years old at a variety of different employers. So it's no way just our employer. But if they tell you you're fired, okay, that's fine. But then they can also say you can't work anywhere.
Right, within a radius.
For a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. That's my issue with the non-compete. I have no issue with the contract. I have no issue with them saying, well, you're employed by us and we're paying you X amount of money, you can't go anywhere else. Great, fabulous, no problem. The issue with these non-competes is, and especially in industries where the government is heavily involved, I don't really have a choice. The employer really dictates the terms of that, but they're kind of dictating the terms based on the government creating barrier to access, which means there really isn't competition going on in the marketplace.
It's already regulated, and then it becomes double regulated when you have these non-competes. I think getting away with them will offer better career opportunity for many people, higher compensation. It allows you to go where you want and have your skills be rewarded.
Yeah.
So I'm all for getting rid of non-competes.
Well, and again, it comes back to if we truly had a free market, it wouldn't be an issue. But the government can't create barriers to access, which it does all over the place, not just in the radio or television industry. Mm-hmm. It does in all sorts of fields and professions. And then the employer is able to use barrier to access, which is created by the government, to their advantage to then say, well, yeah, but if you don't sign this deal, then you can't work here. And if you can't work here, where else are you going to work? That's my point. We don't have a truly fair market, a free market. If we did, this wouldn't be an issue. And if some guy's making $5 million a year, okay, yeah, that's not unreasonable to say, hey, for a year or 2 years or whatever, then you can't go anywhere else because we've also still got to pay you. But if you're a person, a middle income person, now you're very rich, so you don't understand this. But for middle income people like myself and Kevin, who are barely scraping by, that's a really big deal.
Yeah, you want to be able to come and go as the market, you know, dictates.
Either have true free markets, and then in which case people sign their own non-competes or whatever contracts they want. But until you have that, you can't be creating barriers to access and then also pigeonholing the employee.
Hey, did you hear that Kanye West is reportedly getting into the porn industry?
Oh, no.
You want to talk about that now or later?
Why don't we save it? We got Merritt's coming up.
Yeah, we've got Jim Merritt. Let's focus on Jim Merritt.
We'll have great wholesome goodness in Jim Merritt, and then we'll talk about Kanye being in porn.
All right, it's coming up on 93 WIBC. Good morning.
I got a job working construction.
That governor's debate was a complete train wreck. The moderator was a disaster, and it seems like everybody, for once, universally agrees with me.
It certainly was not the conclusion that commission wanted.
Here's the thing. When the nicest man in all of Indiana politics and government says, you sucked. You sucked. It is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Casey's here. Jim Merritt, hello. Merritt, you've been around this.
Now,
you started in politics when you were three.
Close.
But you told us on State House Happenings you've been doing this for 50 years now.
Yeah, stuff in the envelopes for Bill Hudnut in 1975 for his mayoral run.
What was the minimum wage in 1975?
Oh, goodness, probably a dime.
Was that?
You're assuming that's what he got paid to step out.
That was a typical volunteer.
Yeah. By the way, so that would have made you... Well,
16.
It would have made you. I wasn't going to give your age out, but I mean, what do you do? Did you just like? How did you get involved in that? Did you just roll out and like just see a newspaper ad, or were your parents into politics?
My parents, one of my brother's closest friends growing up was Bill Hudnut's stepson, and so we were close with the Hudnut family, and so it was. It was quite a time.
I feel
like
you came out of the womb in a suit and tie. You were, if somebody was born to be in politics, it was you.
I did wear a tie on the bus when I was in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Because we were studying Indiana government. Yeah. Joan Gubbins, State Senator Joan Gubbins was coming to see us that day. So, yes, I wore a tie that time.
So pretty much what I'm gathering is he really had no direction in his life. And his friends said, hey, come help me with my dad's thing. And then he stayed there.
Well, public service has always been something that I thought as being very, very honorable, and Bill Hudnut had quite a personality, and he was actually a congressman before that, and then lost in the Watergate baby campaign to Andy Jacobs, and so he turned his vision towards Indianapolis. And look what we have now.
Okay, so let's talk about something that was a disaster, and that was that governor's debate. You've been a part of many, many debates over the years. Have you ever seen a moderator go into business for himself like that John Schwanis guy did?
Well, I'll just say this. The referees in a contest, such as college basketball, football, pro basketball, pro football, it's always the officials are not supposed to be mentioned with the game result. They should not make any moves that would... that would sway it from one side to another. And a moderator in a debate is actually a referee, somebody that's going to moderate, somebody that's going to keep everybody on time. And, we've talked to Abdul, our friend on State House Happenings, and you're supposed to be seen but not heard.
Mm-hmm. Neutral.
And so, Yes, and the moderator at that debate really ended up being the story. And I watch it. I wasn't watching the debate until Rob posted on social media that this is going to be very, very bad. And I forget what you
It was like had, a Saturday Night Live character, Casey. Yeah. It was like I think
yeah, it was cratering. I think what you said.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher to pop out.
I had to tune in, and what Rob said actually happened.
Do you think that he just wasn't prepared, or he was just trying to get talking points for someone else?
You know, I don't understand because
what happened.
Indiana lawmakers is what he presides over, and
he literally interviews people for a living.
Yes, he's had all the experience in the world, and he was a newspaper man when they were highly thought of, and I'm not sure what happened to the moderator that night, and he was the issue. And people, you know, as Abdul says, there are a lot of uncommitted people or people that haven't made up their minds. And it was one of the candidates' last opportunities to make their case.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. If you're a candidate, how do you feel about that being kind of the ending note of the
frustration
debate?
Because I heard one candidate say that most of the issues that they believe were asked were federal just the idea of a federal question, whereas they wanted the opportunity to talk about how things impacted the state, and you had to have those sorts of questions. And there's a lot of frustration on everybody's behalf on that panel.
And then when you do that, when you set it up like a federal question, then it's on the candidate to not only answer that, but kind of redirect it back to Hoosier voters.
Absolutely. You've
so
got to be good
twice
enough.
As hard.
Yeah, you've got to be able to pivot mm-hmm. and bring it back home to where you're comfortable. And we've said this before, Lieutenant Governor Crouch has such a great way of getting her message out, and she probably did the best of focusing on what she wanted to say and say nine things in an answer and get it done.
Is that who you would say won that debate?
I don't know if anybody won that debate. By his absence, Braun probably won that debate. But Suzanne gave very, very good directed answers to the questions. And she was kind of on autopilot.
Yeah, but here's the thing about all this. Okay, there's nobody more into this stuff than you. Mm-hmm. You weren't even watching until somebody posts on social media, man, you got to see this moderator. This is a disaster.
And you tuned in because it was a train wreck.
Yeah.
And so what regular person was even watching this?
I don't think many were. And I don't know how you look at that. But I think that a lot of people that tuned in probably had their minds made up and they were supporting one candidate or another. And
so you think they were just watching to kind of reaffirm?
Support. They're candidates, they're fans, if you will, they're voters, they're supporters. They're watching to support whoever and then tweet out if they do so, support for Suzanne when she mentioned Axe the Tax, or I think Doden's the one that talked about property taxes. And he's late with that with solutions. So I tend to think that regardless of what poll you see, people have made up their minds.
All right, let's take a look at some of these other congressional races, Jim, out there in the 5th District. I love the Raju jingle.
I do.
I think it's very catchy.
I think we need more of that in politics.
We have spelled that out to people, but I don't think that's moving the needle. Mm-mm. I think maybe some people who have no idea what's going on might vote accordingly. It's a two-person race, mm-hmm. Sparks and Goodrich. You had the misfortune of serving with Goodrich in the General Assembly. Is that right?
Well, I served with Goodrich and Sparks.
Oh, that's right. She was
Sparks
in there,
was
too.
State senator.
She underachieved mm-hmm. there before going to the House as well. Who you got?
Well, first of all.
Because it's your district, right?
Yeah, I live in that district. Yeah, and you can see how much I wanted to be a member of Congress, not running. Way back in the 60s, Birch Bayh, Evan's father, had a little jingle called Hey, Look Me Over. And it just caught. And Birch Bayh was a member of the House of Representatives, Speaker of the House of Representatives, and it really added momentum to his race. And Raju's jingle, you know, I really miss the humor in politics, and so that added a little bit to that race. But we know that this race comes down to Congressman Sparks and as well as Representative Goodrich, mm-hmm. and they've spent all sorts of money. She wasn't going to run for re-election. and then changed her mind. Goodrich puts in a lot of his own money, and now it's ended up being a political food fight, and it's gotten personal. And people are talking about Congressman Spartz and how she handles staff, and then she throws some negatives at Goodrich and calling him China Chuck and things like that. And it's just kind of swirled the drain in the way of the grace and what we expect out of what I expect out of campaigns. And so it's just a terrible thing that it's kind of devolved into this type of campaign. And I don't know who's going to win. I think Spartz is favored because she's the incumbent. Whenever you see her at a campaign event or a Republican event, people are lining up to talk to her. I don't know if it's because of constituent problems or she just is somebody that is conservative. And when you look at North Central Indiana and Kokomo, where Abdul, it was kind of a debate the other night in the Lincoln Day dinner in Howard County. It was people offered one or two sentence answers and not much of a debate. But I think Congressman Spartz has the momentum.
Before I let you go, Shreve's running these incredible ads against Mike Speedy. Mm-hmm. The ad about him voting for all the tax increases in the General Assembly is great. And then he's got this new ad on guns, mm-hmm. where he's basically making fun of everything that's wrong, mm-hmm. with Mike Speedy, the way he's holding his gun, mm-hmm. the way he's shooting the gun, the thing about the vest he's wearing, which I thought that was incredibly clever. You know, if you're Shreve, your issue is guns. People are against you because of your stance on guns. So take the focus off yourself and just put it on what a doofus Speedy is. I love that.
Well, it's a great campaign ad. And I'm a big fan of Mike Speedy, but Shreve really hit. He ought to continue to hit that, put that that ad on the airwaves, because the music and what actually is going on in that, where he's pointing out so many fallacies with Mike Speedy's ad on guns, and it's kind of taken the attention away from things, and it brings back just memories of people such as Braun when he ran for the U.S. Senate with the cardboard cutouts of his opponents and how they're the same. And he put Luke Messer and Todd Rokita as one person, and then he with a blue shirt on and separated himself out. And that's what has happened with this governor's race, is nobody has separated themselves out other than Braun with his endorsement from Donald Trump.
Yeah, if you suck, put the attention on somebody else about how much they suck even more. I like that, Merritt. Hey, Merritt in the Morning, you can find on Facebook and Twitter, the fabulous podcast you do with Klopfenstein. Jim_Merritt on Twitter. You're the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Well, he said in an interview with Alex Jones that he was anti-porn, and now it seems he's changing his tune.
Oh.
It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So Kanye West reportedly wants to start his own porn company. Not just a movie, not just a show, not just a website, but an entire company.
Does he want to be in the films, or he just wants to, like, create the films?
He just wants attention is what I'm getting from all of this. I mean, after his fall from grace. At one point, he was kind of like the poster child for conservative influencers. And then he started spewing all of those anti-Semitic things and comments, and he is no longer in the limelight and just needs some attention, right?
Well, we've long pondered with this guy, how much of it's an act, how much is he just a little or a lot off, and the truth probably lies somewhere, you know, in the middle when it comes to what is actually going on with him. But here's the bigger problem. The bigger problem here is, it's the example of hitching your wagon to the cause du jour. Mm. And, you know, you're a little more seasoned than me. I'm sure it was this way when you were growing up. It was this way when I was growing up, which was the people you kind of put up on pedestals had to earn that, because it was repetitive behavior or actions or whatever that you said, I admire that person. And it was especially true for me in terms of political thought and speech and people that kind of inspired me to get involved. It was repetitive views and actions and writings and broadcasts that you would say, okay, this person is fill in the blank, and they've earned my respect. They've earned my adulation. In the 24/7 news cycle we're in now, in the Instagram, Twitter sphere world, people just, I mean, they just ping pong all over the place and people become the cause du jour and they hitch their wagon to whatever in the moment without any sort of vetting process. And it seems like this is what happened with Kanye West. The guy has a screw loose. He's clearly, and you don't know whether it's he actually has a screw loose or it's an Andy Kaufman-esque type of thing where he wants you to believe he's a little off and he's captivated that. But the guy has some just bizarro views and lifestyles, and he's not somebody we should be
taking seriously.
Well, he's not somebody we should be propping up as some sort of hero or someone that children should aspire to be like.
So here's the weird random connection that is going on with all of this. Kanye, he's apparently in talks with Stormy Daniels, ex-husband, who is an adult entertainment veteran, and he's going to help shepherd this whole thing. So part of me wonders, is Kanye doing this to get back at Trump? He's going to partner with the ex-husband of the woman who's involved in this hush money trial with Trump. It's like Trump put him out to pasture and gave him the stiff arm, and now Kanye wants to do everything he can in retribution.
I've always found it interesting, the people who thought Kanye West was some sort of thought-provoking individual. Like, I've never heard him give interviews that I thought, man, that's really deep and insightful. Now, by rapper standards, was it much different than what you normally hear? Yeah, but this is not, you know, some deep thinking super intellectual that was at our disposal here, and he kept getting presented as that. And the reality is, for a man his age to be saying, this is what I'm going to do, I have all this wealth and resources and ability to do good in the world and inspire people and, you know, really be a force for positive think and positive actions for people who look up to him. And this is what he's going to do with his time and his money?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Does he have all of that wealth still? Or does he need to recoup some, and this is a fast track?
Well, he took it on the chin, certainly, when he was just in that bizarro behavior, publicly bizarro behavior period. But I don't think
it's over.
Well, I don't think it's over either. But I mean, it was like every day he was doing something just totally outside the mainstream and the norm. And people were kind of like, you know, look, it's hard to lose. It's hard to do stuff when you're the level of fame of that guy to lose your sponsors. It's hard to do something when you're of that guy's level of notoriety because it's sort of already baked in. Like, the guy's a little off. He's kind of an oddball. If people are going to do business with you, they kind of know that. But yet he found a way to do stuff that was so egregious that people were just like, I don't want to touch you. I don't want to be seen with you. I don't want my company associated with you. You've got to really, really screw up to do that. And he did that, and it does. It is painful when you see somebody who has the ability to reach a vulnerable population, a population that really isn't getting a lot of positive reinforcement or, in many cases, positive mentorship, and this is what they're choosing to do, or this is what he's choosing to do with his time and resources.
Well, it makes you wonder. He started down that dark path with all of the anti-Semitic comments, and now he's just accelerating it. Like, okay, if this is my lane, let's give it the gas and go all in.
And I'm the last person that's going to be questioning somebody being a little off or a little odd or a little eccentric. It's not that. It's the repetitive, just egregious behavior and actions and words that he knows is doing nothing other than he's doing things just to create controversy. And in many cases, the things are inflammatory and hurtful deliberately. It's not like he's speaking truth about government. He's not like he's coming out and pressing politicians. He's saying things that he knows are inflammatory. And do you really need attention that bad to hurt a whole bunch of people in the process?
We've got Pete Seat, who is going to join us next.
This is a fascinating conversation. Pete worked for the Coates campaign. He's worked for Holcomb's campaign. And he is going to make the case to abolish the Indiana Debate Commission after that train wreck of a performance Tuesday night in the governor's debate.
We'll hear from him coming up on 93 WIBC. Get down, girl.